540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Five people are still missing after the partial collapse of a Davenport, Iowa apartment building. CBS's Adriana Diaz is at the scene where Davenport Assistant Fire Chief James Morris talks about the search.
Rescue crews may search the building again, but it's unclear when due to safety concerns.
You can't run up to a pile of bricks and rocks and just start throwing things off. As much as we want to, we want to get everybody out, and we want to do it right now.
Protesters don't want a demolition until all people and pets have been found.
There she is.
Encouraged by the rescue of 52-year-old Lisa Brooks last night, rescue crews had missed her.
Police are searching for three suspects connected to a Hollywood, Florida shooting that has left nine people wounded. Two people have been arrested on firearms charges. Hollywood, Florida Mayor Josh Levy.
The police have also recovered five weapons in total. It's pretty crazy, right? In broad daylight, in the middle of a holiday weekend with thousands of people on one of the busiest public beaches in the country, for people to come in and suddenly start shooting at each other in broad daylight, who does that?
As the House Rules Committee prepares to vote on a debt limit deal tonight, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer praises the work of President Biden and the White House negotiating team.
Of course, nobody is getting everything they want. There's give on both sides. But this agreement is the responsible, prudent, and very necessary way forward.
Far-right conservatives are criticizing the deal. A state appeals court panel reinstates a grant of parole for former Charles Manson follower Leslie Van Houten, who took part in two killings in 1969. The ruling goes against California Governor Gavin Newsom's decision to reject Van Houten's parole. Rich Pfeiffer is Leslie Van Houten's attorney.
I don't think Governor Newsom really believes she's a danger to society, but if he doesn't oppose her release, he's going to lose a lot of votes, and he knows that. That's why he has to do this.
Disgraced Theranos CEO Elizabeth Holmes has begun serving her 11-year sentence for bilking investors out of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Holmes turned herself into the minimum security women's federal prison in Bryan, Texas. It's about 100 miles north of Houston. It comes about a year after she was convicted of four felony counts of fraud and conspiracy. Her claims that Theranos technology could scan for various diseases from just a finger prick of blood were proven false.
Every time you create something new, there should be questions. And to me, that's a sign that you've actually done something that is transformative.
Holmes has also been ordered to pay back investors $450 million. Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
This is CBS News.
Need hires who dazzle without the hassle? You need Indeed. Their powerful platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Local radio for your community. Civic Media broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Authorities still aren't saying why a train jumped the tracks in Devil's Lake State Park near Baraboo Sunday. Nobody was hurt, and nothing in the derailed cars was a threat to public safety. Last we knew, authorities were still trying to track down who owns the derailed cars. Lawmakers this week will debate whether Wisconsin taxpayers should chip in $2 million toward the cost of Green Bay hosting the NFL draft in 2 years. Packers president Mark Murphy says he hasn't heard much opposition to the request.
No, I mean, it's economic development. It's going to help. It's going to benefit the state. You know, it's good for everybody.
Murphy was on Upfront on Channel 12 in Milwaukee Sunday. 250,000 visitors are expected. The total statewide economic impact could be $94 million. In sports, the Brewers host Toronto tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
RV High is now in session. Today's subjects, biology.
Name an animal with a long neck.
Dinosaur, long neck, yeah.
Let me ask you something. When last time you seen one?
Anatomy.
Name a part of Steve Harvey that a woman might want to kiss.
Your six-pack.
The six-pack? Does she know who Steve Harvey is? You got to dig for it, but it's in there.
Get school with Family Feud.
Weeknights at 6 and 6:30 on CW18.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
A no-holds-barred political conversation. That's Matt Flynn Direct.
Anybody running against Trump, if he calls them a nasty name, they should hit him back twice as hard. This is not the Marcus of Queensberry gentleman's rules anymore. In politics, certainly not in the Republican Party. Hit him hard.
Matt Flynn Direct. Weekday afternoons from 3 until 4 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app. Log on civicmedia.us.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
didn't do all the things that they had wished and hoped and had such great hopes for. And, you know, obviously the IRS was part of it. And in fact, he said that, you know, 98% of the money is going to stay with the IRS. I'm not sure where he dreamt that number up. Not sure which orifice that was chosen from. But the number is a little bit more significant than that. But what it did do is we didn't default. I guess that's a victory for the Biden folks. We're not going to go gutting all of the things that had gotten passed in the first 2 years. It's a win. We're not going to attack seniors. We're not going to gut Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. So I guess these are victories. But my problem keeps coming back to, we have normalized this kind of crazy, and it's got to stop. It really does. It's that kind of angry for me. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Kurt from Akron on line one. Kurt, how are we doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great, and thanks for responding to my email this morning or this afternoon too. And you just said something right there. We normalized it, and the problem is both sides. And on the extreme, they have purity problems. You know, like, oh, I'm mad because Bernie Sanders didn't get the nomination, so I'm not going to support anything Hillary Clinton does, or I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I don't like Joe Biden because he's selling me out because of my purity. And, these are where you vote your conscience. And once you get your candidate, that's when you got to start supporting the team. And that's how it gets normalized. That's how this stuff that you just talked about gets normalized, is people just can't look past their own interest on both sides, it seems.
No, I don't disagree. I mean, when you get to the fringes, we've got problems. And sadly, the fringes...
And they're both dangerous.
No, the fringes are the problem. I mean, you know, they're willing to kill the practical over the perfect. And look, the Republicans are going to try and do this with this bill. The talk is that, exactly, you know, they're going to try and block this. And look, some of the Democrats, there's some talk too that this may
get... Well, I just read this that it just passed the committee. The debt ceiling just passed the committee, so I guess tomorrow it will go to the full House.
Yeah.
But like I was telling you earlier too, you know, back in 2020, Joe Biden was not my first choice. Joe Biden was maybe five or six down on the list. He wasn't even in my top five. And I actually supported Pete Buttigieg because I like the idea of a young guy who, to be honest with you, any guy who learns to speak Norwegian so he could read a book in Norwegian, that says a lot about this guy, right? But my thought was, what is acceptable to me and what I find okay isn't necessarily acceptable to the country as a whole. So even if my guy does not win the nomination, I will support the guy or girl, woman, whatever you want to call her, who does become the nominee, and do everything I can in order to get that person on my team elected so that we can have a Build Back Better, so that we can have, you know, free pre-K and free public or free community college, and we can get people who have student loans at least $10,000 to $20,000 written off, because, you know, statistics show that prior to the student loan crisis in the 1980s, when it started, your average age for a first-time home buyer was 29 years of age. Now it's 41. So there's a lot of things that maybe I didn't agree with Joe Biden on or Hillary Clinton on. But you know what? Like I said, the primaries are where you have your vote of conscience, but then you have to go and support the person who is your nominee, who believes more in what you believe in versus the other guy. Because eventually what's going to happen is all these purity people who stay home because Bernie's not the nominee, or they're going to do everything they can to get Bobby Kennedy Jr. elected or become the nominee. You know what? You're going to end up with Donald Trump. And then a lot of you people who support these fringe people, which eventually someday maybe these people like Bernie Sanders or a Bernie Sanders type or a Bobby Kennedy Jr. type will come along. But you know what? If you get a Donald Trump or you get a Ron DeSantis, if you have some of the things that are strikes against you in these people's minds, you're not going to be able to vote for those people that you believe in anyway. So you're going to be disappearing off the face of society. So, you know, that's what it comes down to.
We are definitely in interesting times, Kurt. I appreciate the call, and thanks for the emails as well.
Thank you, and you have a good night.
Thanks for your time. No, look, you know, this is one of those moments where we've got to decide which way we're going here. And I don't want to default, but I still think the president has to move in a direction to use the 14th Amendment to undo this, to stop this kind of hostage taking. I do want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Geraldo Rivera back at it again. what I love is we're in a moment where Republicans are looking for someone, anyone, to save them from themselves. And I guess Geraldo is going to be that guy. Because look, the reality is Republicans are losing their minds. And there's an opportunity here for Democrats, if they get their heads out of the sand and you know, start taking up some of this slack. There's a chance here to unite the country. But Geraldo, he's floating the idea again of President Biden pardoning Donald Trump. Kind of the way Ford pardoned Nixon back in the day. It was for the good of the country. It was for, you know, to put all this stuff aside, get it off our plate, and help us to move forward. He's arguing that clemency would be good. It would be good for the country. Trump would get it for, you know, what happened on January 6th and the inciting of the riot and the violence and all that came out of January 6th. The Mar-a-Lago documents that have some problematic parts to it, and anything else that the federal government, basically a clean slate. But the price. Oh, the price. The price is Donald Trump can't run. He's going to have to pledge that you're no longer going to seek the office of the presidency, and he can just, you know, ride off into the sunset, clear conscience, no problems, just go live out his days, playing golf in Mar-a-Lago. Now, first, you know, nice job, Geraldo. I mean, carrying the Republicans' water, trying to get him out of the way, because look, he's the front runner right now. Right now, he's the GOP nominee. He's going to have to be knocked off that perch. And I don't see anyone in the field yet who's going to do that. So this is a way of trying to clear that field. And if Biden's smart, he'll stay out of it. Let the Republicans deal with their issues. And I said this back when they threw Marjorie three names and the other idiot, I think it was Gosar, off their committees. Why are Democrats saving the Republicans from themselves? Let them be who they are. And let them go down and deal with their own issues. And Trump is a huge one. So for me, if Biden goes in and that's, I guess it's kind of a moot point, to be honest, because there's no way Trump is going to admit he did anything wrong ever, which, as I understand, is part of what a pardon gets you. He said, hey, I did something wrong. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. Those words have never come out of Trump's mouth. So I think it's a moot point. But I still don't think Biden should do it. Now, here's the thing. Republicans, when you think of old school Republicans, you think of, sound fiscal policy, which, when they're in power, out the window, you think of smaller, less intrusive government. Yeah, they've shown us that's not them anymore. A strong military, background backing and business. So when you think of the GOP, that's what we've been trained over the years to believe, that they're the party of small, less intrusive government, wise fiscal policy, the military and business. We've shown that the first two, the smaller, less intrusive government and the fiscal responsibility, that's nuts. But we look at now how they're trashing the military. And if you looked on Memorial Day and you saw, someone like DeSantis out there, saying how weak the military is and that it's woke and, it's because of all this political ideology and gender pronouns that our military is so weak. And my mind, as I'm listening to this guy go on and on about how, this isn't the military that when I was there, they're weak and they're soft and they're all these things. And I'm going, have you bothered to talk to any of the people who are actually in the military? Do they feel that they're weak and soft? Do they feel the way that you're portraying them is accurate? Do you think that the rest of the world hearing somebody running for president saying right now, hey, if you want to do something to the U.S. right now, because, all of our soldiers are, they're just running around in pink tutus. They've given up their weapons for mascara. This is the message that you're sending the world. So I got to wonder, my military friends, are you okay with having someone like DeSantis say, you're all weak. You're all indoctrinated. You're all no good. But I'm going to fix you. We're going to re-indoctrinate you in my mindset. And it's really quite frustrating on one hand, but scary in that if someone like, let's say, crazy Kim Jong-un thinks, hey, they're weak, and decides, hey, we're gonna keep testing, that puts our people in harm's way. Now, you've got Tommy Tuberville, the dumbest guy in the U.S. Senate, who has been single-handedly holding up military nominations going forward. As a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, he's holding up nominations because evidently he claims that there's abortions on demand everywhere. It's all over things that he disagrees with that he thinks is going on. It's like, there are drag shows every weekend. The military, our soldiers are dressing up in drag. And you go, what are these people thinking? There's a moment here for Democrats to step forward and go, no, this is not what our military is. This is not who our military is. Just because we're not Uganda, ready to take people of the LGBT community out and shoot them and execute them, just because we're not them, doesn't mean we're weak. There's a moment here for Democrats to take a very strong military stand and move some of the support, because Republicans keep bashing the military at every turn. Remember when they used to flags and soldiers all around them? I do find it interesting that instead of soldiers now, DeSantis has got a battleship in the background. I wonder how many of the Navy people that are on that ship are, I guess in drag right now. According to him, I guess it's all of them. And it's not just the military. Conservatives are going after corporate America. They first it was Bud. It was Bud Light. Oh, they sent a can to some woman. Oh my God, end of Bud Light. And then they went after Target. They started harassing employees there. Now this blew my mind when I saw this. Now they're going after Chick-fil-A. Yes, that Chick-fil-A, the one who's given millions of dollars to the anti-LGBT world, and the owner, the CEO, this Kathy guy, who is one of the biggest funders of hate groups in the country, they're now woke. They're to be boycotted. And I'm going, what? Have you lost your minds? And the answer is yes, because they believed, because of some online commentator, they believe that Chick-fil-A has hired a diversity and equity person, a new VP to run their diversity programs. Now, the reality is, you know, Chick-fil-A did this back in 2021. They've already got it because they wanted to get people to come work for them. Kind of hard to recruit people if you're not making them, in you know, part of the community. So they, you know, in their crazy right-wing views, but they have someone who's, you know, talks about diversity and inclusion and all this stuff to come work for their place, because that's how you recruit people. You know, maybe when DeSantis talks about the military, you know, the recruiting going off the end, maybe this is part of this. But it's not just Chick-fil-A they're targeting. Also, they're targeting Walmart, because Walmart's too woke. Netflix is way too woke. And Alphabet, you know, they're going after all of them, all of these big companies, because of diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. For short, for the simple. And this is where just being a decent person is a violation in right-wing crazy land. Just being a human being and compassionate is a bridge too far for these folks. And that's dangerous stuff. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast, wherever you find your favorite podcasts. You'll find ours. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day known as among the darkest days for labor, the Memorial Day Massacre. For days, strikers had suffered arrests and severe beatings at the hands of Chicago police, who physically prevented them from establishing picket lines at South Chicago's Republic Steel. Joined by supporters from practically all walks of life, strikers decided late in the afternoon to march to the gates, determined to picket. For Michael Dennis, author of The Memorial Day Massacre and the Movement for Industrial Democracy, Southeast Chicago became a crucible in which a wide spectrum of social and political alternatives became possible. The Little Steel Strike was propelled by the realization that workers lived in a country dedicated to democratic freedom, but worked under conditions of near autocracy. Men, women, and children, black, white, and Mexican workers all chanted, "CIO, CIO," as they marched down Green Bay Avenue. The Chicago police waited for them, armed with revolvers, nightsticks, and blackjacks. Strikers defended their right to picket as police once again formed a solid line, preventing their passage. The police soon launched tear gas canisters and began firing into the crowd. The picketers turned away in a futile attempt to escape the staggering brutality. When the dust settled, 10 were killed, 30 more shot, 28 others hospitalized, with 8 suffering permanent disability, and another 20 to 30 injured. Virtually all those shot had wounds in the back or side. Michael Dennis notes the massacre cast the die for the strike. Collaboration between municipal officials, corporate leaders, and the military in suppressing the strike would go uncontested by federal authorities and cheered by middle-class opinion. The campaign to organize Little Steel had suffered a crushing blow.
If poobahs of the National Democratic Party wonder why working-class families, which once formed the party's solid base of political support, have gone astray, they might ponder the awful message they're sending by constantly smooching Senator Joe Manchin's tail. The multimillionaire West Virginia coal baron and anti-democratic Democrat is demanding that a massively polluting pipeline named Mountain Valley be rammed through rivers, watersheds, national parks, and down the throats of the people of West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina. Why? Money. The senator's fossil fuel funders, who own the project, want the federal government to mandate construction of their corporate boondoggle. For a decade, gutsy grassroots groups have rebelled and defeated these Wall Street profiteers, and the people of this Appalachian region are still adamantly opposed. But here comes Biden to rescue Manchin and his fossil fuelers with a dirty backroom deal overruling the will of the people, proclaiming that he wants to advance America's conversion from fossil fuels to renewable energy. Biden is pushing a bill to make it easier and faster to get federal approval for new energy projects. fine. But his bill specifically greases the skids for more fossil fuel projects. And guess which one is the first in line for quick approval? Yes, Brother Joe Manchin's Mountain Valley Pipeline. Pumping frack gas through three states would produce a mess of leaks and spills. But the project would also emit some 40 million metric tons of planet-warming gas a year, equivalent to the annual pollution of 10 coal plants. As the Natural Resources Defense Council puts it, we won't build the clean energy economy of the future by doubling down on the dirty fuels of the past. This is Jim Hightower saying, for information and action on this raw deal, connect with Appalachian Mountain Advocates, appvoices.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I saw this piece the other day over at Politico, and I don't generally spend a lot of time reading Politico, but this just grabbed me. And the headline, How Buy America Could Derail High-Speed Trains. And it's all about how we don't have the manufacturing capacity to build these high-speed trains, and that we should chuck the Buy American provision so we could bring this stuff in. And I'm going, this is the kind of defeatist nonsense that we've been having shoved down our throats for years. Look, if you want to participate in our economy, it's time you make things here. If you want to put high-speed rail in here, build it here. That's the answer, not the answer that they gave. I'm here to share some thoughts on what the answer is, and maybe I'm too critical of Politico, but here to share some thoughts, I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come share something. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, great to be with you tonight.
So am I reading this right? I'm looking at this headline. I'm reading through this article and I'm going, yeah, we don't have this stuff to build these high-speed rail cars yet. We don't have the ability yet, but we could. I'm pretty sure we could.
Yeah, I know we could. First, let's just, you know, your criticism of Politico, honestly, pretty spot on. What happens here are industries who want access to this money because there's a lot of resources available for building out infrastructure or building out clean energy manufacturing. But there are strings attached, right? And those strings are that you have to do the production in the United States. All of these industries are used to outsourcing. I mean, that's totally what they do. And we really don't have high-speed rail in the United States yet, right? And so they're like, well, we don't have high-speed rail yet, so we shouldn't have Buy America. Let us bring it over from China or wherever else. And the problem with that is that, you know, you'll never get the manufacturing jobs that way. And it's not that hard to get them. And this is the thing. I mean, we've had these requirements on electric vehicle chargers, and you've seen dozens of companies, many of them from like Asia, Australia, Europe, set up shop in the United States and stand up a factory here because they're like, you know what, Dad, we want to access this money,
yep,
but we're going to make these chargers in the United States. But the problem is that, you know, these other industries, solar industry is another good example. You know, they hire these spin masters and they go pitch Politico or whomever and say, oh man, you know, we don't have this. And so this is going to delay it. This is going to delay the goals of like climate or high speed rail or whatever. So Buy America is impractical. And that's completely the wrong lens through which to view it. I mean, Buy America is supposed to be an insourcing incentive and to say, you know what, if we're not making it here now, we ought to be making it here soon.
Yeah.
But what they just want to do is continue to have the stuff come in offshore and you know, get taxpayer money for it in the process.
Now, this is one of those things, and we've talked about this for years. Look, we've been losing manufacturing jobs for decades. Industries that used to be the bedrock of our communities are now gone. this is an opportunity. If we're going to move to the brave new world of high speed rail and electric vehicles and you know, communications and 5G and all of this stuff, if this is where we're going, we should, the money we're going to spend to get us there should actually trickle down to the people who are workers in this community. I am a big fan, and I've said this a gazillion times, of domestic production for domestic consumption. We make things here, you use things here. We trade for things that we cannot make. And rail cars, sorry, we can make those. Those are not special that we need to go somewhere else to get them.
Yeah, I mean, we have rail producers in the United States. And the truth is, and this is the honest to God truth, I mean, a lot of the companies that would be coming to the United States would be foreign owned. I mean, they would be Asian or European, precisely because we don't have high speed rail in the United States and they have the know-how, but they will locate factories here. And we've seen this, right? I mean, we've seen this, like, you know, for whether it's electric vehicles or the EV chargers or to some extent solar. Now, and on battery factories, it's like, you know we have to set up shop in the United States in order to access this money. And so my hope is that no one in Congress or the administration is going to read this Politico story and be swayed. But it is yet another example of the obstacles that we face here. And it's kind of obvious that we don't have high speed rail manufacturing because we don't have high speed rail.
Right.
I mean, why would we have it, right? And so, but this is the opportunity to bring the manufacturing to the United States, and it's got to be integral to the process. Otherwise, you know, I think the average voter is going to view high speed rail as being very elite, something that city people want, and it's going to connect them fast. And they're going to get left out of it, and they're not going to get any jobs. So why bother, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing. Yes, city people want them. But you know where those trains go through? They go through rural areas too.
They do. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, this is a way of connecting this country in ways that we haven't done in 100 years. And what I find interesting, and what I guess what sent me off in this article, is that there's actually an association called the U.S. High Speed Rail Association who's advocating for not making the high speed rail in the U.S. That just sent me off the deep end, because as you said, you know, you've got these spinmeisters who are trying to create this environment of no, we can do this stuff cheaper, but with the name of U.S. High Speed Rail Association, that's what got me. I mean, the rest of it I expected, but just that name.
It's pretty frustrating, isn't it? It's like false branding a little bit. But, you know, they want the money. They want high-speed rail in the United States. They just want to bring it from somewhere else. And that's the problem with all of this. And it was the problem with a lot of other industries. And so what we've shown, and the administration has shown, you know what? We'll be flexible. We'll phase this in, right? You know, but we're eventually going to want to make this in the United States, because Rick, you pointed out, we have a lot of know-how with respect to rail. I mean, whether it's freight or passenger rail, we do have capabilities, and we're good at making complex things. You know, you think about aerospace or automotive, and we're very good at that. And so there's a lot of crossover with high-speed rail manufacturing, and all we have to do is have the right incentive, and we're going to get it here.
Yeah.
But it's not going to pop up on its own. And so that's why you have these Buy America requirements in the first place. And so, it is red, white, and blue washing is what I would call what that association is doing, because they're there for the money, but not for the manufacturing jobs.
Now, you've got an op-ed on now arguing that our federal Buy American rules should be implemented, that we should be moving forward on these. Arguing that we need to strengthen them and actually not just have them, but enforce them, because we've got rules on the books already. I mean, I think of the Berry Amendment that, you know, says, you know, our military stuff should be made in the U.S. that we give waivers to way too frequently. And that's left us, I would argue, kind of in peril should something happen around the world on a large scale. So what should we be doing?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of like the behind the scenes stuff that is kind of really you know, the drapes are pulled and the curtains are pulled, and it's hard for citizens to peek in and see what's happening. But it's the rulemaking process that's actually implementing all of this. And so this is where these special interests, like the high-speed rail folks or what have you, seek waivers and seek to weaken the requirements and to do it in a way that is that is not easily exposed. But we are exposing it, and we're holding the agencies accountable and saying, you know what? President Biden said he wanted all of this money to be applied to U.S. manufacturing as we're building out clean energy or infrastructure, what have you. So let's do it. And unfortunately, some of the agencies are too cozy, I think you could say, with the contractors and the others, again, that have leaned on imports for a long time. And so it's an uphill struggle, but I think we're making progress. And we had thousands of people who contacted the Department of Transportation to say, you know, don't weaken these rules. And so we're hopeful. We're waiting for the next step here, but we're hopeful we can get it. We can get it done. But we're, our job is to put some sunlight on this. So it's not easy for these moves to be made kind of behind the scenes, you know, outside the view of most taxpayers or voters.
What I like about this is this should be nonpartisan. I go back to 2016, and I say this all the time, and I've had people come, well, you're always trying to give Trump credit for something. I'm not giving him credit for something. I'm just saying what is. He had his thumb on the pulse. We are losing manufacturing. This is an important issue to working class people. This should be something that unites us. This should be something that pulls us as a country together, communities together, saying, look, we want these jobs back. We want these opportunities to build our infrastructure, to build the future, but also, more importantly, to support our families and keep food on the table and a roof over our heads. That should be screamed from the mountaintops, not just by you, but by every politician and every... both sides of the aisle. This should be a unifying moment.
Yeah, it should be. And we know, because we've seen polls on this issue, that it's one of those things where it's like 90 to 10 or 85 to 15. And Republicans, Democrats, Independents all strongly support having their tax dollars go to Made in America purchases for our federal government or our infrastructure programs or what have you. And so the only reason why we haven't seen more of these Buy America programs over the years is that the big special interests like the Chamber of Commerce or a lot of, you know, a lot of embassies that have sway in the United States try to block all of this stuff. But we've been fortunate. You're right, because Trump did talk about it. He talked about Made in America a lot. He actually didn't really do anything until literally his last two or three days in office, did an executive order on this that had a little bit of teeth. But Biden has really stepped up and done extraordinary work, I think, on Buy America, both through setting up an office at the White House to monitor this and to keep tabs of the agencies. As well as to have a personal commitment that, you know, the money flowing through is going to go to American manufacturing wherever possible. And the Congress agrees. Yeah. And it's one of those few things that they've gotten done right over the last couple of years. So, you know, we're hopeful. But we have a lot of ground to cover. As you mentioned, Rick, we've had these laws in place for a long time, but they've just been weakened over the years. And so we're getting it back up to where it should be, and we're adding more stuff to it. And I appreciate the attention that you brought to it, because it does make a big difference.
Well, look, when we did our Working Class Heroes radio tour, we went to places, and I've said this before, that used to be, you know, they used to manufacture, you know, glass or rubber or you name it. That used to be the heart and soul of these communities, and that's gone. And it's been replaced with addiction. It's been replaced with broken families and chaos. This is a way to pull those communities back together, you know, from a public policy standpoint, but more importantly, from a pride standpoint. You know, when we talk to these folks, there still was that sense of pride that we used to make something here, and we want to do it again. So this this is one of those things, you know, give the people what they want. They want to get back to work. They want to get the skills that they need, which is why I'm thrilled to see that, you know, community college admissions are going up, that we're getting people the training and the skills that they need, that apprenticeship programs are full and moving in a direction to get us the knowledge and the ability of people to take a piece of metal and turn it into something, to have that human capital that we so desperately need and have been losing for far too long.
Amen. I mean, this is a welcome change, and it's one of those. I mean, the fact is that only 40% of Americans will get a bachelor's degree, if that, not even 40%. And so, but for these manufacturing jobs, it usually requires something more than a high school education, and that's where community college comes in. It doesn't even have to be for 2 years. It might be just a couple of classes or a training program, or Rick, as you pointed out, an apprenticeship program. And then you can get a job. And if it's a union shop, it's going to be a family supporting job with great benefits. And you're going to be giving something back to this country, because you're going to be adding to our productive capacity and our economic security. And so we're slowly turning the ship around. There's more attention on this. And I'm very glad that we're seeing community college enrollment up. We need to make sure it's affordable. We need to make sure that it affects it reflects the realities of today's student, which many of whom, are not just out of high school. You know, they're transitioning careers, or they have a family, or they have transportation needs. And so you have to factor in things like childcare and, access to transit and flexible schedules and what have you. But the system is now starting to meet the students where they are. And I think that's a big help in getting that enrollment up. And manufacturers are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, look, I'd like to, you know, there was news out that like Dollar Store is adding like 1,000 stores in the United States. And, you know, for people who want to shop, I suppose that's fine. A dollar store is not going to win us a battle if we need it. It's not going to be a source of good jobs for the community. Instead of 1,000 dollar stores, we need 1,000 factories,
absolutely,
to go in.
And on the dollar store front, I mean, I don't know if you saw social media stuff coming out. You know, they run stores with one or two people. There aren't even jobs that are being created. And then all of the handicapped, inaccessible stuff, all the problems with that model. You're right. We don't want that. We want to bring back that manufacturing capacity. But, you hit on something a minute ago with education. Now, I've been saying for, probably about 10 years now that maybe we need to start looking at expanding from K through 12 to K through 14. We need, 2 years of VOTEC, 2 years of community college, 2 years of apprenticeship, 2 years of something additional that you're not digging into your pocket, that we're now going to fund, because we're moving into an era where we're so technologically advanced that currently K through 12, not going to cut it, that you're going to need those extra years. You're going to need them. And making sure that they're available, I think, will help poor and working class kids the most.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. And I think that has to be factored into this thinking and this is the problem of honestly, getting parents, getting guidance counselors, getting others comfortable with this is going to be one of the biggest challenges, right? Because it's all embedded. It's like you do your 4 years of high school, and then you can do your 4 years of college, or maybe go to the military, or maybe get a job, and too few people. It's like maybe you go to community college, but the good news, more people are looking at that. But I agree, it has to be affordable for everybody, and it has to be kind of baked into that thinking about what's next, and that so you have a path. And the cool thing about it, and I just know this from doing work with our steelworker partners, is that you can if you train for a job in a mill and it's a few months. And then you can get your union card. You can be on the floor. You can be making a family supporting wage in a hurry. Yep. And it is a complete game changer. Complete game changer for somebody. And that's the difference that manufacturing.
That is the difference. Scott, as always, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Hope people will take a look at the website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Scott Paul, thanks so much.
Hey, Rick, great to be with you. Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Make sure you check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. We'll get links out on social media. Now take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day that came to be known as the Republic Steel Massacre or the Memorial Day Massacre in Chicago, Illinois. Workers had gathered to rally for a union at the Republic Steel plant. The crowd included men, women, and children, and began with a festive holiday atmosphere. But soon the festivity gave way to horror as police opened fire, shooting indiscriminately into the crowd of workers. 10 workers were slain. Many others were injured. The violence was caught by a film camera, which captured chilling scenes of policemen beating workers with clubs as they tried to flee the violence. One of those workers was a woman by the name of Guadalupe Marshall. Lupe had come to the United States from Mexico in 1917. At the time of the strike, she was working for the famed Chicago Hull House, researching the conditions of Mexican workers in the city. During the massacre, she was wounded in the head. She was then shoved into a patrol wagon, where she tried to help other wounded people. One of the wounded died in her arms. Later, she testified before the U.S. Senate Committee of Education and Labor about what she saw that day. She said, quote, "As we were walking along to the patrol wagon, I noticed men lying all over the field. Some of them were motionless, some were groaning, but nearly all of those that were lying down had their heads covered with blood and their clothing was stained with blood." The Senate committee helped expose what happened that bloody day in Chicago. The local newspaper blamed the violence on the workers, and the film of the event was suppressed by the city.
Republic's bloody ground, the 30th of May. Oh, brothers, lift your voices high for them that died that day. The men who make our country steel, the toilers in the mill, they set in union.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's great to hear Scott talk about, you know, reshoring manufacturing and the future we could have. I mean, look, you know, the high-speed rail, something that I would love to see. I would love to be able to, you know, we're going to Chicago in July for Netroots Nation. In fact, we'll be in town the 11th through the 16th. We're looking at putting this something together for listeners on WCPT AM 820 in Chicago to, you know, kind of bring people together. But, you know, it'd be great to be able to jump on a train and pew, make it to Chicago and not have to fly or, you know, we're going to drive because there's, you know, going to be five of us. But it's just one of those things that it would be great to have the option. It would be great to be able to get on a train here locally and in a couple of minutes be in New York City, you know, 5 hours away. It would be great to be able to, you know, to go home and visit in Cleveland and not be on a train for, you know, well, there's no train right now. But it would be great to be able to do that. But, you know, you gotta plan for that. And look, reality, you've had a Republican Party who's been hell-bent against it. And some Democrats, too. The lobby firms have done a quite well job of it. But, you know, I think about my wife telling me back in the 80s when she backpacked across Europe. You know, you get a Metro Pass and you could go just about anywhere. We don't really have that ability. Something I would love to see. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are we doing?
Semi-insanity.
All right, that's progress.
Absolutely. What I wanted to say was, you know, I have lots and lots of relatives, and my cousin's daughter lives in Germany, and when she came over a year or so ago, she said she was very disappointed to find out, like, our transportation and our infrastructure. She said she was rather disappointed. And then last year, my cousins that live in Poland came over to visit. And they were telling me that, you know, because they have money, they own a ski resort in Zakopane, Poland, which is where my Polish side of the family is from. And they have been all over Europe. And they were telling me about getting on the high-speed trains and, you know, in no time at all, they were at their destination. So I really believe, I agree with you, the Republican Party is just holding things up. Some of the Democrats are, and I think that, you know, they can fight and try to put us back into the Middle Ages, but eventually we may get at least to the 20th century.
That would be a great start. It would be a good start, at least to the 20th. Not the current day. Appreciate the thoughts, Alice. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good stuff. No, I mean, look, even if you don't want to ride the train, this is what I've said a million times. If you don't want to ride the train, don't. But you know what having the option would do? It would get all of those people who are in front of you in traffic, you know, the hours that they're saying we're going to be spending in traffic. And in a lot of major cities, I guess Los Angeles is next, where they're going to be charging you tolls to go through certain parts of town. Because, hey, we're gonna have priority lanes like we see in many major cities, where if you're willing to dig in your pocket, if you got the money, you can save time. But if you're a poor working stiff, well, you're going to be sitting in traffic. This, to me, is one of those moments where you go, you know, we can, we should, we must. And it would be good for the...
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.